Hello and welcome to the Ecocentrics. I'm PK.
And I'm Tom. And this week we're going to be discussing the UK's progress on climate change.
Why a recent report to Parliament says progress has stalled.
And what really has gone wrong?
And how are we going to get back on track?
So PK, before we dive into the report from last week from the Climate Change Committee, have you been watching any of Wimbledon?
No.
No?
I'm a bad non-British person.
Oh my God.
I've seen nothing.
Where have you been living? The reason I brought it up is because there's been a bit of controversy. Have you seen the controversy around Wimbledon?
Oh.
The big controversy at the moment is its sponsorship.
I think I have seen something about this, but I didn't read it.
Barclays sponsorship of Wimbledon.
I saw something like people protesting or celebrities saying Barclays must go. And then I think it was linked to their fossil fuel investment and not divesting.
Yeah, Wimbledon are stuck in their ways at the moment. And it makes me quite sad because I love the tennis. And they are refusing to move away from Barclays as they're one of their key sponsors. And Barclays are one of the worst banks in terms of fossil fuel investments. So if you bank with Barclays, move quickly because it's not good for the climate. And they just have for every £10,000 that you have in a Barclays bank account, there's around about 3 tons of carbon emitted. So it's just huge amounts of carbon coming from Barclays banking processes. I just wanted to bring it up because it's been kind of floating on the edges of the news this week. And I think it's really important that we kind of bring it to the attention of the listeners to say, actually, this is not a good sponsorship deal. And when will we do something about this?
Did you say the tennis?
The tennis, yeah.
Because I like the tennis.
This is the only tennis there is. The rest of the season, who cares?
Oh.
Who cares what happens in France? Who cares what happens in the US Open?
Are you left-handed or right-handed tennis player?
Right-handed tennis player, but I can't play tennis. I get too confused with the squash racket stuff. I basically just slice it up into the sky.
I'm left-handed, but this was when I was much, much younger and I had a tennis coach.
You had a tennis coach?
Yes.
PK, what is this? Oh, my friend's an airline pilot and I had tennis lessons.
Yes. Well, I don't know why we had a tennis coach. We were broke, but I think I lived on an Air Force base, and maybe all the kids were getting this tennis coach. And maybe my mom says, yeah, I can check in $3 a week for that. But he got mad at me because I'm ambidextrous. And so instead of doing the backhand, I would just switch brackets and I would hit it. But you can't do that in competition.
Can't you? Oh.
No, I did at the time. You couldn't. Anyway. So, yeah, so people being mad about Barclays with the fossil fuel leads us directly into our topic today and what the Climate Change Committee had to say, which was bad on you, government of the UK.
So as of the day of recording this, it was around a week ago that the news broke from the Climate Change Committee that the UK is no longer a leader on climate action. And too many things that we have done as a nation and our government has done has pushed us away from our leadership role on climate change. But before we go into that, it's probably worth actually saying who the Climate Change Committee are.
Due to the Climate Change Act, the Climate Change Committee has to, by law, report every year before the end of June. And what's really nice is it assesses the government's progress towards our net zero ambitions and our targets. And it puts the government under a lot of scrutiny, which is great because not every country does this, but it is a nice thing. Something that the UK can stand by is that we do have this. However, every year they say we are not doing enough.
Yeah. So I think what's really interesting and novel about the Climate Change Committee is this kind of independent scrutiny body for climate action in the UK. And as you said, there aren't other countries that necessarily have a similar body which gives this independent review. And the report that came out last week was this progress report to Parliament in terms of how things are moving, if they're moving quick enough. This is the 15th year it's happened, so 15 years following 2008 when we had the Declaration of the Climate Change Act. And this is a really useful process just to check to see how things are going. And what we're really critically evaluating against here is what are called the carbon budgets. At least 10 years ahead of time, the Climate Change Committee releases a carbon budget, which is a target for UK emissions to fall to make sure we stay aligned with our international targets and our net zero targets. And as I said, these are reviewed every year. This is our 15th year of review, and we can see how we're doing at the moment.
So basically, that's who they are. But what did the report say? Tom and I both admit that we have not read in its entirety, the 400-page report. We do plan to do that after dinner this evening, don't we, Tom?
Yes. Just a quick bit of light reading to go to sleep.
Yeah, a light reading. And we'll say goodbye to our families and loved ones for the next 3 weeks. But we have both had an overview of it. And frankly, the chairman, Lord Devon, said that, and I quote, failure to act decisively during last year's energy crisis has put the UK at a loss, and we are no longer the clear global leaders in a position we once held.
Yeah, it's his last year as chair of the Climate Change Committee. He's been really good.
It is. It's his last year. Goodbye, Lord Devon.
Interesting character as well, because actually traditionally conservative as well. And I know there's this kind of stereotype that maybe the Conservatives are less keen on climate action, but actually some of the big voices are from that political persuasion. But yeah, he made some really, really important points in his review of it. And I think that fundamental one that we just lost our leadership position and we have moved away from where we used to be, not only in terms of our actions on our domestic emissions, but also the rhetoric that surrounds it. The Cumbrian coal mine that we went ahead with last year, the new oil and gas fields that we've licensed in the North Sea, all of these decisions are making us no longer be the leader we used to be on climate change. And on a global stage, people aren't looking to us as leaders anymore because of this, because we're making decisions which are not aligned to the net zero target.
Yeah, and Lord Devon said that the Cumbrian coal mine and also the North Sea oil fields go directly against the CCC advice. And we're continuing, or I should say the government is continuing to make these decisions or pushing it on to the next election. And he did specifically say it cannot wait till the next election.
Yeah, I think what was really interesting within this report was now the changing in direction of other countries as well. The UK has been kind of seen in this leadership role for a little while, and we're doing things which are really exciting. I've talked before about the reduction of coal on our electricity network and our electricity grid, which is really amazing for decarbonisation. But this is the first time there's been a whole suite of other international policies which have been recognised as being so much better than ours. And I think that's really interesting for the approach we're taking to climate action. In particular, the Inflation Reduction Act from the US was announced. And also the Green Deal Industrial Plan in Europe as well. So two like landmark policies in both Europe and the US, which are driving radical action on climate change. And the UK has not made any policy decisions which are anywhere near matching the ambition of other countries and other players.
Other countries and regions are taking bold action as well. And he stressed the point, even China. So, you know, if we're doing worse than China in these things, that, you know, what does that actually say? It's a failure, really, to prepare for industries of the future. So by us having lagged in action these past few years and also not preparing appropriately and creating policies and infrastructure in place and also ensuring planning matches the net zero projects, we will fall behind on future industry. These other regions that are planning for this and implementing these strategies will be ahead of us. And it's always hard to play catch up.
Well, at least we can take a leadership role in failing. If nothing else, we can redivide our efforts and we can be a great nation which ignores the need to act.
Yeah. So that's what the report said. And really, why has progress slowed? Well, I think for some of the reasons we've mentioned, I think it's sort of politics and just being an American and definitely coming from a political system that is not perfect by any means. There is a bit of stability, although there can be some problems with this, where you know you're going to have a certain person leading the country for 4 years. Here in the UK, we've gone through a lot of prime ministers in, I think, in the 5 to 6 or 7 years I've been here, we've had 4 or 5. And I think that leads to, I'm not saying that's a right or wrong system by any means, but what it definitely does, it leads to stagnation because things can't happen. Or if you get a new prime minister, I also think then their cabinet goes out. And then other things people have to be put into place. Meetings that were going to happen or deals that were going to be made don't necessarily happen. Sometimes that's probably a good thing. But other times, in terms of big initiatives, I think that can get stalled. Tom, what's your perspective on that, given that you've grown up here? Am I wrong in thinking that?
Well, I think, first of all, it felt like you were praising the US far too much in that statement.
Oh, no, definitely not.
Amazing.
Definitely not. No, it's definitely got its issues. But the market does, like, once somebody's installed, there's a stability in markets for a specific reason.
Yeah.
Literally, you don't know next year if the you'll have the same leader or the same cabinet.
Oh, I completely agree with what you're saying, as much as I joke there. There is failings in terms of the fact that actually this understanding of what's coming next is missing. And the fact that there's so many policy U-turns and things change so quickly, and the fact that it is hard to get kind of more deep binding policy in the UK means things can be overruled. One of the big parts of this puzzle, which is missing from the Climate Change Committee's report, is the fact that there is really minimal push for industrial strategy and industrial decarbonisation. And one of the reasons that is there is because there hasn't been a clear policy strategy. And maybe if we'd had a government which was ready to commit to this and push forward, we could have a policy strategy and then organisations would know where they're going. Again, if we think about things like our heating, domestic heating was a massive failure in this report. And one of the reasons why is because people are putting their hands up and saying, are we doing heat pumps? Are we doing hydrogen? What sort of electrification are we going to be looking at? And it kind of just leaves us a bit stuck. There's no strategic leadership from government to say, this is what we're going to be doing.
Yeah, exactly. The report did mention that that's one of the biggest issues. And I wasn't even thinking about this, but the government's not even going to make a decision about hydrogen and other ways of heating the country until, I think, 2026. I mean, it's 2023. We've got problems now. And so that's another three more years of not making a decision, which means it's going to take another 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 years to implement the infrastructure to get this going. So we are going to be so far behind.
And bear in mind, this report made clear as day that we need to cut emissions on an annual basis by 5.6% a year. 5.6% year on year on year. And having confusion about where we're going with these things is not going to help us do that.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the solutions, if there are things that we need to do that this report outlined, is definitely to have a plan in place and infrastructure and start making for our government to start making these decisions now, you know? And then some other things they also highlighted, and when I think anybody with even half a brain would understand, is our planning of buildings and our regulations for that type of housing infrastructure. We're just continuing to building houses that are all going to have to be retrofitted. If we could go ahead and start building houses now that were fit for purpose, highly energy efficient, this would help abate some problems down the future. It'll also save people money in the long run. But again, we're just checking off housing plans that aren't going to be able to do it.
And I think what's really sad from my perspective is I work with a lot of local authorities and local government officials, and they all want to do things on this, but they've got housing targets they need to hit set by central government. And they've got growth targets, which they get their funding based upon. And they can't make developers and builders have high quality, low carbon housing, because then they lose funding from central government. There's just like a fundamental failure in the planning and policy regime which exists there. And it's not only houses, it's also energy infrastructure. There is so many challenges in the appeals process which can stop energy infrastructure going in, is really, really limiting our decarbonisation pathway, along with just underinvestment in the national grid to be able to let us connect new renewable energy assets to the grid infrastructure.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So in this report, some other areas that they've talked about is decision-making process absolutely must be consistent with our net zero ambitions and strategies. Not doing so means that our international reputation hangs in the balance from the promises we've made, and that the decisions being made now are not aligned with that. And in the case of the coal mine and the new North Sea oil fields, go directly against that. So additionally, he talked about land use and the agriculture sector, that there is no clear strategy and policy. I do some work and chat with different people who are in the agricultural industry, some of it arable, some of it livestock. And farmers just don't know what they need to be doing, or, you know, they do feel put upon. But without any clear strategy and a policy and support in place, and also the communication to help them understand this better, and also to make them feel like there's a way forward, they could be heroes of some of this as well. That is another highlight in this report that they said absolutely needs to be addressed. That's something else that needs to be done, in addition to peatland restoration and planting more trees, though we know we can't plant our tree way out of this. However, more trees will help us down the line.
So there are a few surprises which came up in this report, which started to show some areas where we are doing better than expected and some areas which we're struggling. One of the areas that really surprised me was actually on the idea of plug-in hybrid vehicles. So a lot of the reports previous to this have been making assumptions that having plug-in hybrid vehicles we would help us meet our emissions reduction targets. But in a study that was released around about 3 or 4 months ago, there was some deep digging done into plug-in hybrid vehicles and their environmental impact. And actually, it found that in most cases, the advertised emissions from plug-in hybrids are around about 3 times less than the actual emissions that come from those vehicles. So to give you an example of one car, their rating was 36 grams of carbon per mile, and the reality of it was 112 grams of carbon per mile. So there's a really interesting question, I think, that we're left with on this is, why were these estimates so far off? And I'm sure we're all familiar with the emission scandals that have gone on before now and the failure of the car industry. But also, the Climate Change Committee proposed that plug-in hybrid vehicles should be banned from 2030 rather than 2035. And I think that's a really interesting move. From a climate perspective, I 100% get it. But when you speak to people on the street, I find that people are still so scared of electric vehicles. Removing the plug-in vehicles, there's the capacity to scare people away even. Where does the balance sit? And can we just ban plug-in vehicles without, these are plug-in hybrid vehicles, without a full strategy to support people to understand electric vehicles?
So the term plug-in...
Plug-in hybrid. So they have batteries and they still burn fossil fuels.
That's interesting that their ratings were 36, but yet it was virtually 3 times that was reality.
I also found some really interesting thing around kind of the educational deficit around electric vehicles, because I'm obviously a nerd. It's quite clear that I'm a nerd throughout this process. But I didn't realize that when you plug in an electric vehicle, beyond around about 80% charge, the charging of the vehicle becomes less efficient. There's a drop off beyond a certain point. And people obviously go to the charge point, they plug the car in, and then they wait ages for that last 10% of charge to get up to full charge, and are kind of just taking up unnecessary time on the charging infrastructure. And I'm a nerd that likes these things, and I didn't know this. How is anyone who has an electric vehicle or is interested in this, but doesn't dedicate time researching it, how are they meant to know that actually that last bit of charge is really inefficient?
I do know that because we do have EVs. We have an older EV and then we have a more new one. And it's one of those things I think that needs to be implemented in the public charging aspect. So at your house, it's a lot different. You plug it in, you set it to go start charging after midnight when the rates are really low. At least where I live, we pay so much less if you have your car automatically start charging after midnight. You can do it with an app on your phone and have it just set and never have to think about it again. And then it does take all night to charge your car, but you don't really need it in the middle of the night. Now, with these public car charging points, it charges really fast up to 80%. And then at 80%, you can see it just drip feeding it. And then so that's all you really need as well. You need to free up that space for other people. But yeah, there's a lot people don't know. And there's a lot I didn't know until I got my EV.
The big standout failure from this report was our fundamental inability so far to install the amount of heat pumps that are required for net zero, but also actually making sure there's the energy efficiency measures in place to go with it. There's just this big gap in actually making sure people can access energy efficiency measures. And there was a scheme that I was involved with a few years ago that went along my street, and everyone was offered energy efficiency measures. Only I took it because everyone was scared about the installers. There's like a big trust issue here. But then from a heat pump perspective, there's just no one that can install them. There's no one that's trained to fit heat pumps. And there's just this massive, massive hole in terms of actually being able to get them put in place. Not only can no one fit them, there's also just not heat pumps available on the market. There's a company I was speaking to a couple of weeks ago that had to wait 16 months for their heat pump to arrive. And if your boiler goes kaput, you can't wait 16 months to get a replacement. Like, you need it there and now. You can't wait for those things to arrive. So there isn't the infrastructure to make sure these things are happening. And we can kind of look back to historic policy failures to understand why this is the case. So there's all sorts of green policies that went on in the noughties and then some in the tens as well. And what always happened, we saw this with the Green Deal in particular and the feed-in tariff as well, is loads of money was plowed in from government to facilitate the growth of a market. So in the feed-in tariff environment, it was for the growth of the solar panel market to create the supply chains, create the skills, get people ready to go. But then rather than a gradual decline in funding, there's just this cliff edge. All of a sudden, the funding stopped, and therefore people just stopped doing it. There wasn't the incentive anymore to do these things. And we see this time and time again with climate efficiency and climate technology, where it's just not being pushed beyond that kind of initial interface. And it is obviously has a major impact in terms of the supply chains and the skills that we're lacking today.
We've said this so many times that the government, they go, here's this pot of money for this particular scheme, but they didn't roll it out in a way where, to your point, exactly the people who are trained and certified to deliver on that installation or that scheme, that labor pool is too small to be able to take up the work. The supply chain for everything they need is not prepared. And so you're right. And in a way, this really bothers me because they clearly have the money, but then at the end of the scheme, they can go, well, we ran this for 18 months, but only, you know, 20% of the fund was used. So it's almost like they can use it in a way of saying, we offered it, but you guys didn't take advantage of it, when actually people couldn't, like, physically, literally take advantage of it because it just wouldn't have been in place. Or to your other point, the trust issue of not understanding who these people are showing up at your door saying, would you like this free scheme? Because obviously we don't trust people coming to our door that we don't know telling us these things.
To finish up on this section, I'm just going to run through some things which are going well, though, because although we could rant about failure, there are some things which are still doing quite well. Big one, electric car sales. Not electric vans, but electric cars were doing really well. We're doing well in terms of grid storage. We're doing well at actually greening government commitments, using bioenergy, and also really interestingly, food waste and livestock numbers. So livestock numbers are actually on target for our carbon budgets in the 2030s. However, I will say with that policy, there isn't any commitment from government or any further policy to make sure they stay that level. Whereas other areas, there's lots of policies to make sure things stay in place. With livestock, there's nothing kind of restraining the growth of livestock numbers. But nonetheless, there are some areas that we are still doing well in.
That is nice to have some good news. Thanks, Tom.
Anytime. Right. Quiz.
Prepare for failure.
You got this. You have got this.
I don't think so, Tom. I'm not feeling it. I'm not feeling it.
You have got this. So, earlier today, I spent some time ranting about the Cumbrian coal mine. My first question to you, PK, is how many tons of carbon dioxide will be released from the coal burnt, from the extraction of coal from the Cumbrian coal mine, every year following its opening? Will it be net zero, as the government promises it will be? Will it be 200,000 tons of carbon a year? Or 400,000 tons of carbon a year?
Four.
Ting! 400,000 tons of carbon a year, which is the equivalent of a third of Stoke-on-Trent. So a big chunk. You've not fallen for the government slogan.
Well, they're talking about the running of the facility is net zero. You know, they don't take into account your basic entire scope, your one, twos, and threes. They're just talking about our building, basically.
PK, you've just got a bonus point.
Did I? Excellent. All right. Hit me up. I got one.
We talked about successful international policy earlier, in particular, the Inflation Reduction Act. And my question to you is, which of the following is part of the Inflation Reduction Act? Okay.
Okay.
Absolutely enormous investments in renewable energy. Nearly $370 billion in investment in disadvantaged communities, prioritizing projects to move people out of fossil fuel infrastructure. Massive projects to support electric vehicle rollout and power infrastructure. $27 billion in a green bank to provide rapid funding support for low carbon technology. Or is it all of the above?
It's all of the above.
Ting! You got 3 out of 2 so far, PK. You're on a roll.
It's almost like you're actually sleeping and dreaming. You're thinking, is this really something that's, you know, been passed?
I think it's crazy that the breadth of the Inflation Reduction Act and all of the things that are going into it. It's so cool. It's good news.
Yeah.
Right, next question. We've talked about the stumbling block of planning in the UK for decarbonisation. But my question to you is, how many wind turbines were erected in England last year? Was it 100, 200, 300, or just 2?
I think I'm going to go with 2.
Ding, 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 ding! Just 2.
That's disappointing. We are falling behind.
And if you contrast that to Scotland and Wales, where there's been hundreds going up, because there's slightly different frameworks and planning systems which go around it, it just shows you where we are. England is a laggard.
Laggard. Nice word.
So I've also talked in some depth this episode about the heat pump systems that are failing to reach market and we're failing to install at the moment. So by 2028, the government says we need to be installed around about 600,000 heat pumps, which is a long, long way from where we are at the moment. We're currently installing around about 11,000 a year. So we're obviously not on track to meet that 600,000 target at the moment. But how far off track are we? How much more do we need to do? Are we only reaching a quarter of our target, a fifth of our target, a sixth of our target, or a ninth of our target at the moment?
I'm going to say a ninth. Ting! Or less is what I wanted to say. Yay, I think this is my 100% quiz.
You've already got 100% effectively, because you've only got 5 questions. You've got 5 marks.
Well, let's see if I can get above 100.
Final question. Which of the following is not one of the Climate Change Committee's key priorities? Is it to empower us as individuals to make positive decisions on climate change because we know the impact that will have? Is it to provide really clear guidance to business on decarbonisation, particularly helping businesses move away from offsetting their way out of problems? Is it to make clear strategic decisions in the direction of low carbon buildings, including clarity on our heating systems? Or is it continue what we're doing at the moment, listen to the fossil fuel companies, and continue to extract more oil and gas?
I'm going to say the last one.
Ting!
Yes.
Correct. Obviously, back to my dull exploits of a Thursday. Radio 4 morning program had the new chief exec of Shell on, talking about how we need to keep doing fossil fuels. We're not ready for the transition yet. We need to keep using our fossil fuels. And it's just ridiculous. The fact that the BBC even platformed him. Don't let him speak there. He does not have a right to speak in that room. He should not be able to speak to the British public and say, this is what I think, unless you have someone just ripping apart every single one of his statements saying, this is crap.
Unbelievable. That was good. I really like that. I'm going to write about this in my journal. Today I got 120% on my quiz.
And that is it. Another episode of The Ecocentrics done.
If you'd like to get in touch with The Ecocentrics, you can email us at hello@theecocentrics.com.
Or, as always, find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, LinkedIn, and officially today, Threads, whatever that is.
Facebook's hopeful solution to Twitter.
Oh, God, it's a controversial new platform.
I know, but we're on it. So until next week, adios.
Bye.